Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Daily Fringe Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Chris Hutton. Chris, how are you doing?
Good afternoon. Yeah, easy, straightforward election results. No difficulty making sense of all these things, so it's been a quiet day or two.
yeah, no, sure thing. and also, we are joined today by Sarah Gahn. Sarah, how are you?
All the more relief for having had my daily helicopter fly over during the intro, so...
Okay, so hopefully there are no more distractions. Right, so what an election that was. Now, we already talked about it a bit on Thursday and Friday, and we have now already begun to see the very early shape of what South Africa's politics is going to look like in the aftermath of these elections. And it may not feel like it, but in my opinion, we have woken up in a new country. One which is very different in the way its politics is going to work. So let me start off by talking a little bit about Parliament, IEC. So the IEC has announced the final results, and there are a number of, this is the seat allocations they gave to each party. Now there are 400 seats in the National Assembly, the Parliament, and you need 201 in order to become the government, in order to be elected president. So the ANC is on 159, meaning that they are, 41 seats short of being able to be the government by themselves. The DA is on 87, the MK party on 58, the EFF slightly down to 39, the IFP slightly up to 17, the PA on 9, the Freedom Front Plus on 6, Action SA on 6, the African Christian Democratic Party on 3, the UDM on 3, the ATM Party on 2, Al-Jamaha on 2, Build One SA on 2, I think it's the National Colored Coalition, I can't remember, it's the Western Cape Party on 2, Rise Mzanzi on 2, the Good Party on 1, the Pan-Africanist Congress on 1, and a party called the UAT, which I believe is the United African Transformation Party, on 1. Never heard of them before, so I have no idea what that is. This means that the ANC cannot form a government without the cooperation of either the DA, MK, EFF, or the IFP. You know, if they got every single small party that wasn't one of the big ones to vote for them in parliament, which is very unlikely to begin with, they would still be, I think, 2 seats short of being able to form a government. So, for the first time since, well, arguably ever in South Africa's, at least since, you know, the 40s, South Africa's parliament, I think, is really going to be the center of our political debate and confrontation. And there's already now negotiations underway to determine what the coalition structures will look like. But before we get into that, let's just talk a little bit about Jacob Zuma and his shenanigans sort of over the weekend. Zuma decided that the results were incorrect, and according to MK, that they were falsified, that the election was stolen. Now, as someone who actually observed in the election and who knows a lot of people who were involved in the election and observing the election, there were definitely all sorts of mistakes and sloppiness and errors and things that the IEC should not be proud of. However, to claim that the election was in a large way stolen, or that this result here is not more or less what the actual votes came in as, I think is something without merit. The ANC, for its part, seems to have, and slightly to my surprise, to be honest, seem to have pretty much accepted the election results. Saying that this is really bad for us, but, you know, we continue, we're down, but we're not out, which I think is a very mature thing to happen in a democracy. However, Zuma was very threatening in his terms about the announcement of the election results. In fact, he demanded the IEC hold back, postpone announcing the results, saying that we have a bigger right than anyone else to demand that it is us who are citizens. Institutions can't say we can't listen to you and let us rush. He said that announcing the election results would be provoking people, which is a sort of ominous threat, maybe, that there'll be more riots like there were in July 2021. After that, there have been a number of community police forums, police, all sorts of groups across KZN who have prepared themselves for maybe a continuation of the riots. But Sara, let me start with you. What do you make of Zuma's attempts here, in my opinion, to kind of blackmail the country, saying don't release the election results until I give the say-so?
I think Zuma's harnessing his inner EFF. He's trying to sort of bluster and sound threatening and get everyone worried that we're going to have another repeat of the July 2021, that he has that sort of power. I think it really the fact that he's not a Democrat, and he certainly said he's not a constitutionalist, is borne out by this behavior. But so for me, I think what he's going to do is, because he's being a spoiler in a situation where the MK has really done very well in the circumstances of a first election in a very short period of time, he's going to look like a spoiler. He runs the risk, I think, of showing that he's so much of what he does, like Julius Malema, is performative, but not always as slick in as far as the smarts go, shall we put it that way. But for me, there were two great moments in the announcement of the election results. The one was Zuma coming late, to obviously to make the grand entrance. I mean, he not just coming late because he felt like, he's coming late. He was going to come in and stir. And they didn't let him in for not coming in time. I mean, that's purely procedural. And what I love about that is that you can, free speech and free association, and you can politic how you like, but there are rules to be followed so that everyone politics according to a certain formula, so that you don't keep on seeing a repeat of what the EFF did for years. They didn't let him in. So Ramaphosa, for what, got to say his thing, and as you said, accepted the outcome of the election, which is a very good thing to cling on to and to, sort of, in a way, remind the ANC repeatedly that, they've done something very democratic and constitutional. And the second thing, and that this was really goes to the ANC's trashing, as one commentator called it, the official who stood up and welcomed or recognized the extinguished guests. And the ANC's guests, well, more to say, their parliamentary, some of them were extinguished as a result of the vote. So what's it, 71-odd people are not going to work?
Yes.
Come the next parliament.
Zuma attempting to arrive, I believe he was attempting to arrive in the middle of Ramaphosa's speech, presumably to, interrupt it or distract people from it or something like that. And the fact that they just did the very simple response of closing the doors because, the speech had started, I think completely deflated Zuma and so far it really doesn't seem like there's much hint of any kind of unrest in KZN, despite Zuma's sort of threats. And I think that's very powerful because it shows that there is, then in a lot of ways, he's quite sort of impotent. I mean, after all, MK did excellently for a new party. It got 14% of the vote, better than anyone thought. It almost took the province of KZN. It brought the ANC below 50%. But at the same time, it hasn't got a majority in any province. It's only got 58 seats out of 400 in parliament. And there's no guarantee that the party is going to survive the next couple of years. It's going to have to now manage to actually function as a political party. So, Chris, some of the biggest questions, I think, in South African politics right now are, one, who forms a coalition or supply and confidence agreement or any kind of deal after this election to determine the direction of the country? The second question is, does the MK party survive? And the third question is, does the ANC survive? I think all of these are very important questions. And then a sort of fourth one connected to those last two is, if either the ANC or MK collapse, where do their voters go? To a new party? Or do they perhaps potentially go back to the other one that hasn't fallen apart? Chris, what do you make of Zuma and MK?
Yeah, so on Zuma specifically and MK, I don't want to discount just yet that there could still be unrest and some element of violence, especially if for MK, the work that they did to take over ANC party structures in KZN province, I'm sure that would have come with some sort of promise or some kind of benefit. And if you don't deliver on those people who maybe died in the wool up to that point, ANC card-carrying members, if they don't deliver to them, what can they cause in terms of violent protest action and the like? And I also don't want to dismiss or discount the influence that I still think, I think it's limited to what it was before, but that someone like Zuma might still have in the intelligence services. That was his bread and butter. That's the work that he did for decades under his presidency, his administration, not the hollowing out of the state security agency, but putting in the people that he needed and wanted there. And I don't see any reason to think that all of those people have been let go or purged or anything like that. So you might have parts of the security intelligence services working against each other, similarly with the police. So getting different pieces of information, counteracting each other's plans, all quite up in the air at the moment. That's not to say I see July 2021 repeating, but I think communities, businesses, people in KZN should be prepared if that sort of thing does arise. And just on the ANC and Ramaphosa, the way that the wheel of history turns around the time of the transition to democracy and negotiating work around the new constitution, etc. One of the key figures was Cyril Ramaphosa. Now he has to try and lead or manage somehow the ANC in its first ever under 50% national and provincial election performance. Whether he's got the nous and the skill to do that, I'm not sure. You've got the chattering classes applauding his speech last night, which I don't want to dismiss, because that kind of thing, it's not guaranteed to happen. That's sort of allowing democratic processes to happen. But also, when your back is against the wall and you now want to be presented as the sensible, centrist, moderate option, you put on this smiling face, you make jokes, you remind people of the good old cupcake days, the good old C-point jogging days, and you ensure that if anyone doesn't want to work with you in a coalition, their base, their supporters, their voters might then put them under pressure, and indeed other South Africans. They might say, oh, look, the ANC is being mature and democratic, but you're not willing to work with them. They've now changed the corner. They've realized their mistakes, etc. So also keep in mind just some of these other optics and things on the go at the moment.
So let's get now on to our next topic, which is what a post-election government is going to look like. Now, there's talks underway between various parties, so we don't really know where the ANC is at, but essentially they have kind of two options here. One is that they can maybe try and form a government with the EFF and the PA, maybe the MK, although so far MK has suggested they won't form a government with the ANC, although whether they're actually telling the truth about that, we don't know. But the ANC should be able to throw together a majority if I think they get the support of the EFF and a party like the Patriotic Alliance. So that's a possibility, I guess. That would lead the country in a more radical direction. We can definitely see things like expropriation without compensation coming down the line there. also, maybe the IFP might be included in that. Maybe the EFF and the IFP might be included in that. We don't know. On the other hand, the ANC also could consider some sort of arrangement with the DA. Of course, with the DA's votes, it would be a much stronger parliamentary majority, the two parties together having something like 60% of the seats. There are talks underway between those two parties. The DA says that it cannot allow a situation where essentially the worst political impulses in the country are able to capture government, in this case, they mean the MK and EFF. And so they are at least considering the possibility of joining into a coalition or a power sharing agreement of some kind, which they are not super happy with. They've announced as part of that a coalition negotiation team led by Helen Zille, Tony Leon, Ryan Kutsir, and I think there was someone else I may have forgotten off the top of my head. Anyway, I'll try and... Siviwe, the chief whip in parliament, was the other one. So that is also, I think, we don't know what that negotiation is going to produce, But this is one of the key questions is, you know, what should any potential agreement between the DA and ANC look like? So far, it looks like the ANC is more interested in a deal with the DA than it is with the EFF. And there's a sort of bizarre spectacle at the moment of Julius Malema going around and kind of sort of trying his luck with everyone saying, oh, we'll work with MK, we'll work with the ANC, we don't need to remove Cyril, we're willing to compromise. Guys, please just give me a chance. I want to be deputy president. Sort of the vibe I'm getting from Malema right now, which is very much a change of pace from how things normally are. And I suspect part of that is because the EFF didn't do great in this election. And he might be thinking to himself, I really need to get out there and, you know, find a new way forward for my party, because otherwise he risks becoming largely irrelevant. So, Sara, what do you make of the possibilities of a DA-ANC coalition? There's not, it's worth remembering that there isn't just, you don't necessarily have to have a coalition where you say, I don't know, the DA is Minister of Finance and the ANC is the President. You can also have a situation where the DA helps the ANC to be elected President and then it gets its own ministers, but then the DA votes against them whenever they feel like it's not appropriate to support the government. That's, you know, what we might call a supply and confidence agreement, where the DA would keep the ANC in government, but then would veto policy positions it didn't want and wouldn't be involved in running government. So I put a lot there, but what's your take on all that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the one of the major problems with a proper coalition, a formal coalition, is that if the ANC doesn't actually change tack and do, you know, adopt policies or adjust policies to favor investment, etc., the DA runs a risk of being tainted with it. And of course, what happens then is it's not only tainted, but it loses its, it runs a risk of losing its, it loses its opposition, the official opposition status, which is hugely, hugely risky. The confidence and supply option does give them more flexibility. Obviously, one of the problems is they might still, there might be sort of guilt by association. So it's very difficult to tell. I think one of the things that may influence the ANC to be more moderate, although, you know, remember, we're talking about the guys who still think that communism a la 1960s dedication is how you should run an economy. But remembering that the EFF and the MK are unconstitutional, their attitudes to the constitution is essentially to get rid of it or neuter it, whereas the ANC globally has kudos for negotiating, and it was the, you know, it kind of pretty much got what it wanted out of those negotiations, one of the most hallowed constitutions anywhere in the world. So a lot will hang, a lot, and I think even with supporters, will hang on whether the constitution is supported or denigrated. And this could be a tack the ANC takes with regard to heading off the MK and the EFF. I think the other thing one has to bear in mind is that, you know, EFF and MK are personality-led parties. Everything revolves around the existence of their leaders. And funnily enough, ANC, that's the one thing I guess one generally can't accuse them of. You know, it's not, you may have a more or less popular leader, but the party's existence doesn't depend on the existence of Zuma and Malema respectively. And parties in that situation, with the sort of breakaway we've seen and probably quite a lot of sort of party treasonous politics in the ANC, particularly in KZN, you know, it's I liken it to a civil war. The bad blood between brothers is badder, worse than any other form of opposition. So it's really, really early days. I mean, obviously, if they go MK, EFF, or any variant of that sort, then we better expect the next 5 years to be looking after ourselves, because no one's going to look after us for us. It just depends on how the ANC sees that, what essentially is the big split that everyone envisaged in one form, in one way or another, a decade ago, whether it decides that, it might actually have to offer something to the public and, you know, steal a little less from the public purse to do so. You know, it's really, for me, it's just too early to tell that, but that, so those are some of the factors at play.
It is also worth pointing out that because, you know, this is the parliament we're going to have for 5 years, unless there's a decision to call some sort of early election, we are very much likely to possibly see a change. You know, the ANC and DA could work out a deal now, and then in a year, maybe that deal falls apart. Likewise, the ANC and EFF, or the ANC and MK, could work out a deal now, and that'll fall apart in a year or two. This is what I mean by how we're living in a new country. The certainties of, you know, we just have an ANC government and you sort of have opposition parties around the outside, that is over. Parliament really is going to be the place where things happen in a big way. Chris, what do you make of the steps for, let's say, the DA and the IFP in particular going forward? You know, as Sara kind of said here, they're in a very difficult position. On one hand, you know, they will probably be seen by some of their supporters as having betrayed the country if they let the EFF and MK get into power. But on the other hand, they risk being kind of made complicit in a lot of the mistakes the ANC has made if they do go into coalition with them. Or even if they have a supply and confidence agreement, they might still get tarnished with the same brush as the ANC. What's your take on all this?
Look, I think broadly, if you have two of your top four parties, to greater or lesser extent, not wanting to abide by the constitution, the rule of law, you're sort of forced now into that particular paradigm. So I'm not saying it's satisfactory for classical liberals. I'm not saying it'll work pragmatically over the long term. But for the time being, of all your options, I think a confidence and supply arrangement is your best of all the options going forward. For the DA, having built up, I think, and done well, especially in the last 4 years since the decline in 2019, you've now restored cohesion, especially ideological cohesion, and that shouldn't be thrown out, I think, just on the back of short-term expediency and you think you can take one or two positions or something like that and give yourself that influence at national government level. I know it's sort of become either the growth or poverty route. So either we go ANC DA coalition and the country recovers, to, you know, over the long term bounces back, or the Venezuela Zimbabwe route where it's ANC EFF MK. I do think it's a bit more nuanced and complicated than that. You have strong private sector, strong civil society. Those things have very much carried the country over the last 10 years, I'd say, if not longer. And going forward, should those be supported, especially even more so by people who watch these kinds of shows and share our content, then that trend line continues. So don't, in the fear and the uncertainty that a force like MK is trying to build off of, don't base your political strategy and decisions based on a vocal minority who's trying to leverage a crisis situation, or uncertainty at least, for their own benefit, at least in the short term. For a force like MK, players like Jacob Zuma, they have to out-radical themselves the whole time. So if on Saturday you say you cast doubt on the elections, don't pressure us, we'll produce the evidence, but, you know, just give us some time. Then the next day you then have to try and disrupt the president's address at the announcement of the results. Then the next day you have to do this and that and that. The more they have to out-radical themselves and the more that oxygen is sucked away if the institutions hold and the other political parties hold the line, the less of an issue that will be. And then you have relatively more stable government over the medium to long term. The last sort of point, I think Gauteng, given the performance of the respective parties this year, so the ANC around 35%, the DA, I think 28, 27%, maybe others trending a little bit upwards, that's probably a sign of things to come for the country nationally over the next 10 to 30 years. And it's going to be messy. It's messy local politics and coalitions and horse trading and whatever. But if you can, as supporters of a particular party or those running those particular parties, get used to that idea that the era of one-party dominance is now over, parliamentary majority, you have to work with that reality, perhaps then you can start to see the right sort of small steps in that positive direction. That, yeah, I mean, in 2004, the ANC was at 69%. Now they're at 40%. The trend lines are pointing in that direction. For the DA to always maintain between 20 and 25%, if they can continue to do so, I think would be a boon to them and should be, from an ideological, classically liberal point of view, should be applauded and tried to be advocated for.
So, you know, we're also faced with, I think, the fact that the ANC is a very much an organization in crisis. I think they've been in crisis for a while, but this election result confirms that. The party, I suspect, is now going to be suffering infighting, the likes of which it has probably never seen before. And that is very much going to have an effect on what kind of government we get. You know, if the different factions of the ANC may have different views on this or that issue or this or that coalition partner, and the losing side may decide to, I don't know, break away and form its own party. Because as MK and the EFF have proved, you can break away from the ANC and still become an important political force in South Africa. So I would not be surprised if we are facing another ANC breakaway party by 2029. What that party might be or who it might look like, who the hell knows. But, you know, this question of coalitions doesn't even just make sense at a national level. Also on a provincial level, we are seeing some interesting things. For example, there are 41 seats in the provincial legislature of KwaZulu-Natal. And MK, which is by far the biggest party in KwaZulu-Natal, only has 19. So they would still have to form a coalition, even of some smaller parties. I guess if they include the EFF, they still would be short of being able to form a coalition there, which means that MK needs to form a coalition in KZN with either the DA, the ANC, or the IFP. So the DA is definitely not going to go for that. I'm not sure the IFP would either, which means that you could see this bizarre circumstance where, despite MK doing really well in KZN, you might see some sort of weird Frankenstein coalition of the IFP, ANC, and DA forming together to lock them out of power there, which would be really wild. Similar story in Gauteng, where there are 48 seats in the legislature, with the ANC having the most at 17, the DA on 13, the EFF on 6, MK on 5, Action SA on 2, and the Freedom Front Plus on 1. Thora, any final thoughts on how we're setting up now for elections? Oh, sorry, for coalitions and supply and competence and going forward.
Yeah, I don't think I can add to anything that's already been said, other than that, you know, there's a certain dreadfulness and wonderfulness about nothing being certain. It makes it certainly makes a change, and it gives us hope and dread. But I just want to make a point about I think Chris made about MKs having to sort of out, you know, it's got to appear to be blustery and extreme, et cetera, et cetera. I think the problem the MK might face is that its constituency is not the same as the EFF's. The EFF's constituency is young, and it's a combination of poor young and the elite young who is stupidly sitting in universities. But right. People move away as they grow older, move away from the EFF. MK is the opposite. It's got the traditional vote. It's got the older voter. It's everything about it. Is not it? We're not in the nursery school anymore with that, and he might find that if he overdoes the sort of antics, it will not favour him come 2026 when we're looking at local elections, and that's really where a lot of that sort of power that Zoom is looking at will be at the local level. So I think he runs a little bit of a risk. He's got quite a Well, he doesn't actually. He should be better behaved, but I'm not sure he can be. And I think it's the fact that his constituency's not necessarily a very radical constituency might end up shooting himself in the foot.
No, it's definitely something to keep in mind, and I think we have to watch MK very closely to see what happens to the party. We now, of course, have the municipal government elections coming up in 2026. And if you look at how the sort of map of results shakes out, we have the potential for an enormous number of municipalities to change hands or to become coalition municipalities, following in the sort of trend that we've seen in the last election. So, I mean, you know, if you took the national election results that we've just had for, let's say, the city of Johannesburg, you'd have the ANC on 32%, DA on 24%, MK on 12%, EFF on 12%, Action SA on 5%, PA on 2%. It's very definitely true to say the era of single party dominance is over. I think it's very unlikely that South Africa will, especially under the current electoral system, ever have a political party that gets 50% of the vote. And so working out how these coalitions go forward on every level of government, from municipal to provincial to national, is going to be very important for making sure that the country can function. Chris, any final thoughts before we close up for today?
Just something that obviously won't be able to be addressed in the short term, but around democratic voter participation, legitimacy of democracy and of the elections, questions here for the IEC, maybe for the media, for many others around continuing decline of voter participation. So despite on the day of the elections, the high numbers of voters being ascribed to high turnout, it's actually due to IEC operational issues. But this year it looks like to be around between 57 and 58%, down from 66% in 2019 and down again from previous election cycles. So I see a spoiled ballot as a legitimate way to voice your view on the status quo. Maybe you're not happy with any particular parties, so you still turn out, but you decide to spoil your ballot. You have your reasons. If you take all the spoiled ballots, spoiled ballots as a party, they were the eighth largest political party, outperforming roughly 45 other parties. So just questions there for the current political parties, again, for our institutions around voter participation. And I think if that trend line continues, then you see even more space for your more populist figures to upend the whole thing to their benefit.
Exactly. I think it's very important that South Africans who are concerned with the direction of the country participate to the full extent, so that we are not captured by sort of populists like those in the EFF and MK who have explicitly anti-constitutional agendas. If you ask South Africans, you will find that things like the Constitution are still, broadly speaking, pretty popular and have only become more popular as years have gone by. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. We hope that you found this show interesting. There'll be so much more to talk about in the coming weeks as more happens and as we get more news from what the different parties agree on and what our new government is going to look like. I think there are, I believe, 2 weeks that the various groups have to work out who's going to be elected president. And of course, failing that, we could always also end up in a situation whereby we have to rehold elections, although I don't think that's very likely. It's something to think about. Anyway, with all that in mind, hope you all have a wonderful day. Cheers, everyone.